when we do our sitcom, that broken clock with the wrong time, which used to have a sticker on it saying, don't look at me, I'm wrong.
I know.
It's going to feature in the... It's going to be like the Fawlty Towers, you know, when the sign, a different bit of the sign falls off from Fawlty Towers.
Exactly.
That clock's going to be in our sitcom. It's a sacred thing, the clock. Those pips there. The universe does not exist without them.
I've got to dislocate my neck to find out how much time we really have.
I'll let you
so
know.
That's the,
Andrew Holden, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
You want to begin with someone that we haven't heard from him for a while, and the reason why we haven't heard from him for a while
is he's been banned. So there's three different elements I want to pull together around freedom of expression and the limits on freedom of expression. So I'll start with Donald Trump, ex-president, and Facebook, as people will recall, banned him after the January 6 insurrection, basically saying that he'd broken their rules around praising violence. Facebook a while back introduced an oversight board, which is basically to look at some of their decisions around what people can post. Not that they have to follow what the oversight board says, but anyway, they've introduced it as a bit of a sop, if you like, around that. So the oversight board has considered that decision to ban Trump indefinitely, come back and said, yes, we agree the ban was correct at the time, but there's nothing in your rules that allows for an indefinite ban, and actually you should go back and have a look at that decision and either ban him permanently or explain why not. And in essence, what the oversight board's saying is, because you don't have this in your rule book, you are actually violating principles of freedom of expression. So that's kind of the first bit I want to flag, that occurred last week, to say Facebook was right at the time. That then brings us into the Christchurch call, which of course was the Prime Minister's response to the mosque attacks in Christchurch, and she received immediate support from the leader of France, Macron. We now hear that the US, thanks to President Joe Biden, is now going to support the Christchurch call, and there's a leaders' summit this coming Saturday. In essence, what this does is create protocols around the posting of extreme violence, in particular live streaming, and what would countries and therefore social media companies do. And they've used it twice, the protocols, to shut down that in attacks in Germany and Arizona. So again, what we're seeing here is governments now working with the likes of Facebook to say, right, there is extreme stuff. What are the limits and how do we shut it down when it occurs? Because we know Facebook weren't going to do anything about it themselves. Which then brings me to the third point, and that ties back to the media, and that's a release of a report recently from UNESCO by two journalists, Maria Ressa, who's an incredibly brave journalist in the Philippines, often being threatened, and then supported by Julie Pizzetti, an old colleague of mine in Australia who does some wonderful work around research. And they've put out this report called The Chilling Global Trends in Online Violence Against Women Journalists. It, not surprisingly to a lot of people, in essence, in surveying it, saying that 3 out of 4 female journalists have been threatened with violence online, quite extreme. And what these two reporters are saying is that, in fact, the time to let the Facebooks and the like make their decisions is long past. And it actually needs a legislative response. They're now looking for governments to impose that control on expression of freedom.
These are activities that are illegal in real life. That kind of harassment is illegal and prosecutable.
Yep.
And what's never happened, as we've discussed before, is that principle of the law has never migrated to the online environment.
No, it hasn't. And in fact, you know, the argument for the social media platforms is we have this broad protection, if you like. In fact, it's built into American law. It's not our responsibility. And in fact, what they do, of course, is they sheet it onto the people, say it's not us. We're merely the platform. You should go after the person who's posting it. But as we know, a lot of them are anonymous or using any number of different ways to hide from it.
Speak to that old argument that we're not publishers, because publishers would be held accountable.
Yeah, that's right. And I think what we're starting to see is that beginning to change. We see it, you know, in some of that legislation, as we've seen in Australia, around you guys should pay media companies. We're sick of this nonsense anymore. And I wouldn't be surprised, and particularly now that we see the US supporting the Christchurch call, will there actually be a momentum to start saying this time's up on this?
The question is, what could a Biden administration do, and how far could it go, and how far would a, you know, radically split down the middle House and Senate go, House in particular.
Yep.
And you come back again to the power of these companies. I mean, to be perfectly blunt, Donald Trump was banned from Twitter and Facebook on his way out.
Yeah.
Not for anything he said
no,
before.
That's right.
And I know it was, oh, it's all about what happened on January 6th.
But
actually, there were other instances. So, you know, again, the power that these companies wield, you wonder how far any administration is prepared to go.
Well, I think if they've got support from governments around the world, and you're starting to see that building up, then the momentum begins there. And you're right, extraordinary power. I mean, Facebook has almost 2 billion daily users. That's an extraordinary number of people around the world. So it comes down to that fundamental question to somebody like President Biden and indeed the US Congress. Can you allow that kind of impact to be going on without any controls whatsoever? Look at the damage this is doing. But, you know, and who knows? I mean, we've seen some pretty extraordinary behaviour and decisions made by Biden in his initial 100 days. So, you know, the possibility is that he could indeed be very radical about it.
Now, what about press freedom itself?
So this is always a fun one to look at and where do different countries rate in the world. So Reporters Without Borders has put out their annual list of press freedom around the world. The top four countries are all in Scandinavia: Norway, Finland, Sweden and Denmark come in tops. Interestingly enough, Costa Rica is number five, which is good to see. Great news for New Zealand is we're eighth in the world, risen up from nine. And you compare that with countries like Germany, ranked 13, Australia 25, the UK 33 and the US 44. In their commentary, they talk about the greatest restriction being the profit imperative of media groups, as they describe it, and therefore the loss of journalists. Some of the commentary I don't agree with. For example, they say as a result of high level of media concentration, only small online publications have managed to provide fully independent reporting and viewpoints. I think the likes of RNZ would legitimately complain about that. But in essence, what they're saying is that we have a pretty good freedom of the press here. I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I don't think there's a journalist in this country who would regard the defamation laws, for example, as being contributing to press freedom. We still see a lot of name suppression through courts issued very quickly. There are strong restrictions around the reporting of suicide, for example. And then there's a piece on Newsroom today talking about the fact that the police have opened an investigation into one of the videos they ran as part of Melanie Reid's excellent reporting last year on the uplift of children through Oranga Tamariki, and some disturbing elements there around, if you like, the decisions of the Solicitor General in taking them to the High Court, having Newsroom change the video. The whole question here is around the identification of children. Newsroom saying we took on board that, we changed the video, they went back to the High Court, they've now got to pay $13,000 in costs, and now they're looking at a potential police, well, not a potential, there is a police investigation, potential criminal prosecution. So there's elements like that that suggest to me that, yes, we do have, by and large, a very free press here, but there are still some pretty strong pressures on them.
If only those same limitations were put on your Facebooks for the material that they publish. It goes to show how distinct the difference is between a formal media organisation and its responsibilities under the law and what happens with a publisher to billions. Okay. That's an interesting one to keep an eye on, and we shall keep an eye on it. Now, really interested to hear Kevin Kenrick talking about a paid subscription service for TVNZ. Not, he insists, to move TVNZ on demand into that model, but alongside it.
Alongside it, because, of course, required to make all content available to all New Zealanders is part of the charter of TVNZ. But what they're looking at, and a very good piece by Duncan Grieve in the spin-off last week, a podcast with the CEO, Kevin Kenrick, and he's now come out and confirmed this week, that probably by the end of the year they will launch an ad-free paid subscription service. So if you'd like to watch everything on TVNZ, but the ads drive you crazy, if you can afford it, you can get that as a subscription service. But if you can't, therefore, you've got to go with the linear TV. But an interesting decision, isn't it, around where is the future of this kind of broadcasting?
Will there be new content on it? Or just the ad-free is the plan for it?
It appears to be the ad-free. You would think they'd also be looking at additional content to try and hook
ads
people into it.
TVNZ on demand, actually, which is it's a treasure trove once you get into it.
Yeah, that's right. So, but they're clearly looking at a way of offsetting the loss of advertising. What kind of income can we look to? Is this appealing enough to get people into it?
interesting. He comes at a very interesting time when we're talking about charters and...
Very much so.
And talking about mixed models, commercial imperatives versus public broadcasting imperatives.
Yeah, where is the chance?
Discuss. I mean, 500 words or less.
That's right. What I like is that despite the merger, you know, you've still got a CEO looking to change the business, looking to strengthen it. That's got to be a good result.
He's made it quite clear that is his focus.
Yeah, that is
his focus.
The
merger happens if it happens, and this is his focus, as it should be.
I'll leave the question of what happens with these kind of things in the future to somebody else.
The clock that does work and is accurate says it's about 10 seconds to 1 minute to midday. So... Thank you, Andrew Holden, very much for coming in today.